Welcome to the final side pod panel for series two. Today's guest host only made her debut last week and is taking over the reins at crazy o'clock in the morning her time. Amy, you are officially loopy, but we love you. Please take it away.
Okay, welcome to the panel. This is probably the first time you've had a heartbroken host, but it's okay. I'm soldiering on. Today we have Team Two Stop versus Team Three Stops. And on Team Two Stops, we have Andy.
Hello.
Stephen Roy.
Hello.
And Bassano.
Hello there.
And on Team Three Stops, we have Chris.
Evening all.
Gavin.
Evening.
And Scott.
Hello.
And for a rundown of the scores, if you say something that Christine liked, you'll hear this. Something she doesn't like, you'll hear this. Something that makes her laugh, you'll hear this. Something that makes her cry, you'll hear this. If you go on for too long, you'll hear this. And if you're really bombing, you'll hear this. Plus, of course, if you fall in the water, you'll hear this. Okay, first up, we're going to go for Team Two Stops, and the first question is going to go to Andy. Why does God hate Finnish people? No, that's not really the question. Okay, seriously now. The European meet in the 2009 Flyaway Sandwich kicked off today in Spain. It is generally accepted that this track is very boring and gives us processional races. Do you think that the 2009 regulations improved the racing at all?
I think we got a little bit more excitement than we used to at Barcelona. Aside the opening crash, the spat between Alonso and Webber was absolutely fantastic, probably one of the best overtaking moves of the year so far. And seeing people going around the outside of one another on certain corners was interesting as well. So overall, I think yes.
Okay, and next we're going to go to Team Three Stops. Same question to Chris.
I thought they did improve it quite a bit. Clearly we had the crash at the start, which could have happened last year. But with the Kers helping Massa stay ahead of Vettel and things like that, it sort of spiced up the racing a bit. It's a bit of a shame because I wanted Vettel to win, actually, but it's just one of those things.
Okay, and the same question for Stephen.
I really would have loved to have seen it without the crash at the start, because I'd love to have seen that the main straight, the first time round, had everyone been in their normal positions, a lot of cars close to each other, a lot of cars offline, just to see what the cars would have done and what everything else did. But that circuit design is awful, and cars that go as fast as F1 cars, you're not going to improve the racing an awful lot, regardless what you do with the regulations, unfortunately. It's just down to circuit that it causes a lot of field spread.
Okay, and now the same question to Gavin.
Well, we're really looking at the aero regs and the Kers regs. The Kers regs didn't really work today because there was only one straight where it could be used. It was used for some blocking, but not really used positively and constructively. And the aero regs, well, the cars couldn't really follow like we were promised they would do. So I don't think the new regs have made this utterly boring circuit any more enjoyable. I think we were all pleasantly surprised today because we're used to a really bad race and we got a dull race instead.
Okay, and the same question to Bassano.
Well, I was kind of expecting a bit of a dull race at Spain. I was hoping the regulations wouldn't make it so, but I think all they've done is to make the gap closer between a car following another, and the Kers just didn't help at all. And the only bit of overtaking, all bar the Alonso and Webber, was all incident driven, so no, it didn't help whatsoever.
And finally for Team Three Stops, Scott.
Obviously the race wasn't really very exciting. I mean, obviously there was the incidents at the start and overtaking Alonso and Webber, and obviously at the end Massa running out of fuel. Well, not exactly running out of fuel, but anyway. I think the new regulations, of course, they've had now five races to settle in and see if they've made a significant impact. I probably would say the racing is a little better, but it's not exactly as good as probably as it could have been. So I think in terms of what happened today, I think that the regulations either have truly failed or we've still got the best to come, I think.
Okay, and at the end of question one, can we have the scores, please, Christine?
At the end of that round, Team 2 Stop have 3 points and Team 3 Stop have 1.
Can I just say that it's rather nice that we've got to round 2 and we haven't lost Scott yet?
Yay!
If we do lose Scott, we're going to have to get someone to change from a 2-stopper to a 3-stopper, though, aren't we?
Okay, question 2. This weekend was the first Grand Prix for Brendan Hartley as the reserve driver for Red Bull and Toro Rosso. In an interview with New Zealand Radio, he said part of cost-cutting was cutting testing, which sucks for a driver like myself. It's pretty hard to get prepared when there is no testing. Inevitably, discussions about the safety of this approach began, and although it is rare for a third driver to be used in a race weekend, some have suggested it is more sensible to have experienced reserve drivers like Christian Kleen for BMW or Pedro De La Rosa for McLaren. What is your opinion on this? And short of allowing unrestricted testing again, how do you think young drivers could get more relevant F1 experience? And first off, that's going to go to Gavin.
I'm always for developing new talent, regardless of nationality. So I think we should always have a younger tester, because I think the tester is there to learn the trade and learn how a Formula One team operates and get the Formula One experience. And therefore, I'm against the ban on in-season testing, because it's how drivers like David Coulthard and others got their sort of experience before they became Formula One drivers. I'm not in favour of old testers, because although they do add some experience in setting up the car, perhaps they don't push the car as much as they could do in testing, as a younger driver might, to impress the team.
Okay, and the same question now to Bassano.
To some extent, I'd agree with Gavin, although it doesn't really matter if you call them testers or reserve drivers. If they don't get the chance to test in season, then the name means nothing. But I would be in favour of younger drivers, and we need to develop some talent somehow, and that's probably the only way you're going to be able to do it.
And Scott?
Yeah, I agree with the younger drivers. I think that what we really need is something like an official kind of like test day, but just specifically for young drivers. So we get a group test where we get all the teams come together, and they can only run, say, like young drivers. They're not allowed to bring new parts, so basically no one's testing, really trying to gain an advantage. It's purely there to try and develop young talent, and it's purely there to try and, you know, help them try and get used to a Formula One car in the view and the hope that they can move up to the big time in the future.
And Stephen, please.
I think to answer the fundamental part of your question, it depends what teams are looking for from a third driver. If they're looking for someone who's going to go in for one race, then you probably want an older guy with experience. But you have to have someone who can do what Coulthard did for Senna, where if someone gets seriously injured, they can go in and race for the balance of the season. Many of the folks in Formula 1 go back to technical regulations, and this is another one. We've got teams building incredibly expensive cars, and instead of Max limiting that, he lets them make really expensive cars and not run them. Surely it makes a lot more sense to specify cheaper cars that they can actually drive a lot and let people get experience. I just don't understand why you would create a set of regulations that mandate making really expensive cars that nobody can afford to run. It's just insane.
Okay, and Chris, what do you think about this?
Well, I think definitely that younger drivers need experience, etc., etc. But I think Buemi was saying this week, at some point during the weekend, that he doesn't think GP2 is good experience because the cars are so fundamentally so different. So pretty much at the moment, the only way they can get experience is drive the car in a proper race. So I think for the moment, it's probably best to go for experienced drivers who already know how to drive F1 cars, so that if they need it in a moment, you know, if there's a problem, they can just be called in and immediately be good, instead of having to adapt to a car they don't know anything about.
And finally, for this round, we have Andy.
I'm not sure there's a simple answer to the problem. I think the in-season testing ban is a big hindrance to the gaining experience in the car. So perhaps they should get themselves a copy of Grid Racer and play on that instead. But the other thing about the older drivers is that they're probably not really concentrating on the racing and thinking about the fact that they could be sitting in a nice warm commentary box or cool commentary box, depending on the race, and earning money as a pundit rather than driving around a racetrack. So I'm not sure either is a real answer.
Thank you very much. And can we just have the scores for that round, please?
The scores at the end of that round, it's 5 points apiece.
Low scoring rounds today, I'm loving it. Okay. Question three. With the announcement of a budget cap creating a two-tier championship, Mario Tyson warned that the manufacturer teams may reconsider their future in Formula One. Toyota have now threatened not to lodge an entry until things change, and Ross Brawn has pointed out that he doesn't like the route F1 is going down. Although some of the teams are in favour of budget caps, none are in favour of a two-tier system. What do you think the response from the FIA will be? Will we see any changes in these regulations? And do you think that FOTA will be able to stay strong throughout this argument, considering each team is really only looking out for their own interests? And that first goes to Scott.
In order for the teams, in order for the bigger teams to survive, they themselves will have to try and push for a higher limit on the budget cap, because I think that's the only really way that they can see that they can really sustain themselves without having to resort to not signing up to the budget cap and therefore increasing their risk of exiting the sport. I mean, because to be honest, as we've said, that it's probably now getting to a point where some teams have already spent like half of probably the $40 million. Know, just developing the car for next season, so they've now just got $20 million just to work with for next season. So I think that really the more bigger budget teams will want to try and increase the budget cap, but I can't really see that happening.
And Stephen?
I think just to pick up on the point Scott made, and it's something we discussed earlier on, the teams are only allowed to spend so much this year on developing next year's car. Well, McLaren started their 2010 car before they launched the 2009 car, and I'm sure they haven't tracked every penny they spent on it, so there's no way the FIA can assess what the existing teams have spent on next year's car already, so that isn't going to happen. The point you're making about what will the FIA do, the FIA want everyone to go in under the budget cap, and what they're trying to do is find a figure that will let teams go in. What they're doing basically is creating a set of technical regulations where if you don't enter under the budget cap, you're uncompetitive regardless what you do. If you get the best engineers, best strategy, best anything, you will not be competitive. So they're trying to force teams into the budget cap. As to whether FOTA will stay together, well, FOTA will stay together as long as it's in Ferrari's interest to be in FOTA. As soon as it's in their interest to stab everyone in the back and go off and do their own thing, they will do that, same as they did with the GPMA, same as they did with the tobacco advertising regulation thing they signed. Ferrari's the weakest link.
And Chris, please.
I think the budget cap is a good idea, but it's too low. Obviously, the two-tier thing isn't good either. So I think FIA should either increase the budget cap or make it compulsory. As Scott mentioned, it's going to be very difficult for the teams who have already started their 2010 car. As for FOTA staying together, I think they will unfortunately start to dissolve pretty soon. The diffuser debate that they've emitted has sort of knocked them back a bit. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to last very long.
Okay, and Andy?
My problem with the cap and the dual tier system is that the problem is that the capped teams can do things that the uncapped teams aren't allowed to, like extra testing or adding something to the front wheels to get KERS energy into the system. But all of those things cost money to do, especially things like testing. So they won't be able to afford to do the testing that they're allowed to do because they're budget capped, whereas the uncapped teams are not allowed to test at all. So I don't see that it's going to make a huge amount of difference. And the other thing I've got a problem with is that the cap doesn't include the basic things like driver salary, fines and marketing. Okay, marketing maybe, I'd leave that one to one side, but to say that fines aren't included, surely a budget cap team would prefer not to get fined for being naughty, and if that doesn't matter, then they're not inclined to behave themselves.
And for Team 3 Stops, Gavin?
Will FOTA do the budget cap and enter it? Well, the thing is, there's lots of clever people in F1, and I'm sure they've got lots of clever accountants, so they'll be able to do things with the numbers to make it seem as if they're under the budget cap, but maybe they won't be. But Max basically wants them to do as he say or not take part at all, because he can be very feudal when he makes his regulations. And so he's basically given them the choice of the regulations where you've got a big advantage if you go in the budget cap and a big disadvantage if you don't. And I think he wants to split up FOTA because it's too powerful an adversary to fight against. So he's trying to split them up and he's trying to make them come under his rules. And I think, like Stephen said, as long as it suits Ferrari, they'll do the budget cap. And I think in these times, with the manufacturers losing money, they have to go under the budget cap. And so I think they'll begrudgingly accept a cap of some sort, maybe compromise on some of the rules.
And finally, for Team 2 stops Bassano.
Well, I'd like to see the FOTA members stick together and just say this is just not acceptable, but someone's going to cave in, so that won't happen. And I can't see a two-tier system being sustainable. The low figures obviously to introduce new teams into the sport, but what it means is they can design something that's quite poor and inefficient, turn the engine revs up and flatten out the wings and do extremely well. And I can't see the F1 audiences taking that.
Okay, can we have the scores for round three, please?
Okay, Team 2 Stop have 10 and Team 3 Stop have 8.
Okay, question 4. In the comments a few weeks back, we were coming up with slogans for the 2009 season because I think slogans make everything just a little bit funnier. Some of the worst offenders are employment unions who have cheesy lines such as, "Because our workers matter." I would like you to come up with a snappy slogan for one of the main unions in Formula One, either the GPDA or FOTA. And first up, that is going to go to Bassano.
It's going to have to be something like, "It's Max's way or the highway."
Nice. And Scott?
FOTA, because your opinions don't matter, and we love screwing you out of good racing.
Ooh. Okay, and Andy?
Well, all I can come up with is the GPDA, probably the best drivers' association in the world.
I really like that. That's incredible.
Lucas suggested a good one in the comments, which was FOTA, united in words, separated in reality.
I was going to steal that.
Who was that? Luca. Genius.
Can I get one from Gavin, please?
FOTA, where 18% is a majority of fans. And GPDA, pay more for our license. Please, sir, can I have some more?
Okay, and one from Stephen, please.
FOTA. All for one and one for all. Right, Luca?
And finally, one from Chris, please.
FOTA. Together we can do more until Ferrari goes.
Nice. Can we have the scores after that round, please?
Do you have one, by the way, Amy? You must have thought of one whilst writing the question.
The one I thought of, GPDA. We are considerably richer than you.
Perfect.
RG has one in the comments as well. GPDA, we care in monsoons.
I've got another one. FOTA, because Flavio's opinions don't matter.
Okay, the scores at the end of that round. Team 2 Stop have 15 and Team 3 Stop have 13. I forgot to say earlier, Amy has 3, Lukey has 2 and RG has 2.
Okay, now this one was actually touched on a little bit in an answer before, but I watched my first ever GP2 race yesterday and I thought the racing was fantastic and Renault tester Romain Grosjean won the race.
Oh.
And we have three GP2 champions on the grid at the moment in Rosberg, Hamilton and Glock, as well as two runners-up in Piquet and Kovalainen. Clearly some of these have underperformed in Formula 1 compared to how they did in GP2. Also, the only graduate from the 2008 series was Sebastian Buemi, who finished his season in sixth place, and a lot of people thought that that didn't really earn him a Formula 1 seat. How relevant do you think performance in feeder series is to Formula 1? And do you think Formula 1 will rate GP2 above F2 or vice versa?
Enormous questions.
First, that's going to go to Gavin.
No, you've got to repeat the question because I didn't catch it.
Do we have time?
Has the host ever got a TikTok before?
No.
It might happen today.
I just read an article in Motorsport magazine saying that Formula 3 was the university of Formula 1 because drivers learn to engineer and set up their car properly and learn racecraft. And they said, how can Formula 2 be on a par with that when you don't even learn how to set up your car properly? So I think there's already a stigma against Formula 2. GP2, although it's a spec series, there are some teams better than others. and I think that's why some GP2 drivers come out looking better than others. However, I'm surprised that Buemi's done so well considering he was sixth and the other five didn't get a Formula 1 drive. I think there's a slight injustice there. I do think GP2's considered the best feeder series and the others just don't have the same status as GP2, so it would be harder to come from another series and get into Formula 1 first.
The same question to Stephen, please.
Some drivers, you go through the junior formula and they get to Formula 1 and everything goes exactly as it did before. Other drivers, like Mansell, all of a sudden they get to Formula 1 and the car suits them better, the longer races suit them better, and they look far better than they did in some of the junior levels. And then you've got the opposite, which is the Jan Magnussen effect, where he blew everyone away in Formula 3, got to Formula 1, and because he was unfit and he was constantly smoking and he didn't want to work and he had a young kid and he had too many distractions, and as Ron Dennis described him as the worst organised Grand Prix driver he'd ever seen, the guy just couldn't make it. So junior formula are only ever going to give an indication of ability. Some of the things I've been reading about F2 this week I've got strong reservations about. The F2 drivers are only allowed to use a setup within restrictions set before the weekend by their engineer. And each engineer does three cars. So if you're an F2 driver like someone like Hamilton or Raikkonen who likes a really tail-happy car, you may not be allowed that by your engineer. So you may be restricted by that. Or if you're the opposite, so Alonso Kubica driver, you could be restricted. So it may not be the best drivers that come out of that championship. So I've got, you know, although there's a lot of good things going for it, I've got worries about it. So I think GP2 is a better guide.
Okay, and that question to Scott next.
I think the problem we have now is that now that there's been some new regulations in 2009, we don't really have a car which is, in all fairness, pretty much similar or a smaller scaled down version of a 2009 car. I suppose the closest we really have is still Formula 3 and, I guess, at a stretch, Formula 2. I think from what other people have been saying, it really matters really if you can actually properly set up a car and not just go fast. Basically, you can have all the skills and everything, but you really need the know-how on how to work with a car. I mean, I was reading an F1 racing that Nico Rosberg, he actually got offered to go and study aeronautics or something, or aerodynamics at university. And because of that, it actually helps him understand how to set up a car. So I think in terms of the feeder series, obviously we need a car which is more similar to a 2009 car. And in terms of whether it benefits a driver, as I said, it's not just down to how fast they are, it's how they're good at setting up the car. I think people like Alonso and Rosberg are good at that because they have the know-how and they have the knowledge.
And the question to Bassano next.
I'd like to think it was down to the quality of the racing, but sadly that's not always the case. It tends to be who you know, PK, or who your sponsors know. It probably does help that GP2 races on the same tracks as the Formula 1 circuit, so naturally that would seem like the best feeder series. F2, I think we just have to wait and see, but yeah, I can't say until we've seen some of the racing.
And Chris, please.
Well, I don't watch any of the feeder series at all. I don't follow that, so I'm a little bit of a disadvantage here. But from what I've heard and read and stuff like that, F3 seems to be sort of the place where you learn your skills as how to, you know, set up the car and drive it, things like that. And then GP2 seems to be where you learn the actual tracks that you'd be driving in Formula 1. So I think GP2 is going to be a better way forward than F2. I might be wrong, but as I mentioned in a previous question, Buemi said that GP2 cars are completely different to Formula 1 cars. So if you might be massively experienced in GP2, come into Formula 1 and just be completely useless because the cars can be completely different.
And finally, for Team 2 stops, Andy, please.
I really don't know what the answer to this is because the changes that there have been, as Stephen was alluding to, you set a car up for the way the driver likes the car to be, and then it gets changed for whatever reason, whether it's due to regulations or whether the car development's going in the wrong direction, and the driver suffers. So I think it's impossible to tell if a driver's going to do well or not. Obviously, it's a guide as to whether they can get around a track and finish a race without crashing on the first lap. Even then, it's not a given, is it?
Okay, that's the end of that round. Can we have the scores, please?
Team 2 Stop have 19 points, Team 3 Stop have 16, and Amy's still on 3, and Lukey and RG both have 2.
Okay, the next round is very exciting for me, something I've always wanted to do. I'm going to call it the lightning round. Basically, this is where my rocket red Lewis Hamilton hat comes into play. I'm going to pick a driver out of the hat, and in 10 words or less, I would like you to describe their race today. This question first is
What a panel of people to ask this question.
Amazing question.
Go on, Amy.
This could be fun.
And first, that is going to Stephen, and your driver is Fisichella.
He was in the race, was he? Didn't notice him.
Is that 10 words exactly?
He was in the race, was he? Didn't notice him. 10. Wow. Incredible.
That was exact.
Yes.
That was a great start to the lightning round, I must say. Next, we're going to go for Chris, whose driver is Jarno Trulli.
Started, spun off, crashed. That's it.
Next, we're going to go for Andy, whose driver is Sebastian Buemi.
Oh, no!
I would have probably said, 3 corners in, I was so fast.
Oh, no.
No!
Okay. And for Scott, whose driver is... I've dropped the hat. Kovalainen. Be nice.
You know what? Because I was just thinking Kovalainen. That's so spooky. What can you say? His gearbox just didn't work today.
Okay, next we have for Bassano, Jenson Button.
Switched his strategy, won the race. Awesome.
And finally for Gavin, we have Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, how good. Hold on a sec. PK pushed me wide, avoided an accident, scored some points.
He finished 9th, so he didn't get any points.
Yeah, he didn't get any points.
Oh, no!
That's got to score no points then.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, that's harsh. That's change some of the tone, we'll be fine.
I like Lukey's description of Hamilton. Oh, no, she's here again.
Awesome.
Okay, we'll call an end to that one. And what were the scores after the lightning round?
Team 2 Stop have 24, Team 3 Stop have 20, Amy has 4, Lukey has 4, RG has 2, and Mr. C has 1.
Round 7. In 2008, our world champion Lewis Hamilton won 5 races. In 2009, Jenson Button has already won 4. Do you think the Drivers' Championship is already a foregone conclusion, or do you expect someone to challenge later on in the season? And first, that is going to go to Bassano.
At the moment, I think Jenson could quite easily run away with it. It's a good job we haven't got medals this year because it's only about 3 races from being finished. I think the only person that can challenge him is going to be Vettel, and that's it.
Thank you. And Scott, please.
I think it's really a pretty foregone conclusion at the moment. I mean, 5 races, 4 victories. I mean, you'd be stupid not to put your money on Jenson. I mean, you would have been at the beginning of the season before his car was pretty epic, but now, you'd have to be stupid not to put your money on him, I guess.
And Andy, please.
I think the only credible alternatives to Jenson are Rubens and Sebastian Vettel. So I can't see anyone else making the leap forward because just as everyone makes a leap forward in the team, the other teams are moving forward as well. So everyone stays exactly where they were.
And Gavin, please.
Well, I was hoping today to see some other cars move forward and perhaps be a little bit closer, but it didn't happen. So I think what we're seeing today is Braun, I still out in front. But there is one thing we should all remember. We've only actually had 2 normal races out of the 5 races. So maybe there is some chance of the other guys catching up on certain circuits. But I think it really is now between Button and Vettel.
And Stephen, please.
I think a lot depends on Monaco. The one type of circuit that we haven't really had is a nice, tight street circuit. Melbourne's a street circuit, but there's a bit of space around there. But if Braun turn up and win in Monaco, then that tends to suggest when they go to places like Valencia and Singapore and whatever, they're going to be competitive there. And those are about the only kind of track we haven't seen yet. I think, really, unless Adrian Newey comes up with something marvellous, this is as good as done. And I actually said, made a comment somewhere after the last race that really Button has this championship sewn up. Unless he's an accident and gets hurt or something that takes him out of it, I really don't see anyone challenge him.
Okay. Chris, what are your opinions on that?
I think there are still chances for other teams to get ahead of Braun. We're only 5 races in. There are another 12 left. But it's getting harder. If Braun keep going the way they're going, I think it's going to be Button for the championship and Vettel second.
Thank you very much. At the end of that round, can we have the scores, please?
Okay, Team 2 Stop have 27, Team 3 Stop have 23. Amy and Lukey still have 4, and RG has 2, Mr. C has 1.
Question 8. It has been an entire year since former world champion Kimi Raikkonen was on the top step of the podium. There's already been a lot of talk about him not contributing to the setup of a car at all, but Eddie Jordan was especially quick to blame him for his being eliminated in Q1 this weekend, even though when it happened to Massa in Malaysia, no one suggested it was his fault. Kimi's just turn up and drive attitude. Oh, Kimi's just turn up and drive attitude seemed to be acceptable when he was winning, but what do you think of it, and do you think he should be doing more to command such a high salary? And that goes first to Chris.
Definitely. I mean, if you're going to win, you've got to work with your team to get the car as well as you can. If you're just going to turn up, drive it and go home, it's never going to work every single time, and this is what's being proved with Kimi right now. As soon as he gets his bucks ideas up or leaves, the better.
And the same question to Andy.
Absolutely. It used to work when he had the best car. Now he doesn't have the best car, and he's not talking, obviously not talking to the team properly. He's more interested in the dessert selection in the back of the garage. I just think he's... I'm not going to say it. I was just about to say the M word there.
Magnanimous?
Motivation.
Oh!
I reckon that.
He's not,
I was actually thinking Magnum.
Yes, so was I. So was I.
Yeah, so Kimmy's more interested in what's in the dessert cabinet in the back of the garage than he is in the card, I think. It's not really working, is it?
I'm just saying that Lukey is on form tonight. In the comments, he said Kimmy's salary goes to giant comedy hats anyway.
Okay, can that question next goes to Gavin.
I don't know where all this Kimi hate has suddenly come from. I couldn't believe the hatred coming from Eddie Jordan this weekend, instantly jumping on the fact that Kimi was obviously a rubbish driver because he couldn't qualify the car, even though the circumstances were identical to Malaysia with Felipe Massa. I think all Kimi was guilty of was following what the team told him to do, because the team should know best. They employ so many boffins. They employ mathematicians, strategists, witch doctors, everything. And sometimes going out at the wrong time can make you look rubbish, which I think is what happened to Kimi. I think his attitude is fine. I think he's still got the racecraft. I think if Ferrari actually cottoned on and gave him a car worth driving, he'd still be winning. So there's nothing wrong with Kimi.
Okay, and that question next goes to Stephen.
Well, I have to say that as one or two people told me afterwards during the live commenting, when someone said Kimi should go back out again, I said he's safe, so he should stay where he is, which turned out to be slightly wrong. Oh, thanks. I think this is one of these subjects that a lot of people talk a lot of rubbish about. How many people know how many days Kimi spent in the Ferrari factory last month? None of us. But people will sit down and say, he doesn't work with his team, he doesn't do this. None of us know whether he does that or not. For all we know, he gives the best feedback in the business, but none of us really know. To pick up on a point earlier on, though, someone made a really good point that Formula 3 is where drivers learn to work with engineers. Well, Kimi didn't do Formula 3. He got signed up before he ever got to Formula 3, so there may be something in that. Put the guy in the fast car and a car that handles to his liking, he's going to be competitive. And in reality, what matters to a driver like him in a team like Ferrari is not how well he does in a car that is only good enough to be 5th or 6th or 7th or whatever. It's what happens when the guy's in with a chance of winning the championship. Does he have the bottle and the ability and the attitude to go and win it, or does his bottle go and he disappears off and, you know, ends up runner-up in the championship. And also, just to put a final point on it, the guy's in the wrong team. He needs to be in a McLaren. The guy's an oversteer driver, the same as Lewis Hamilton. He belongs in a McLaren, not in an understeering Ferrari.
Okay, that question next goes to Scott.
Right, first of all, I'll make it clear from the off, I don't hate the guy, and I don't think he's a bad driver. I just think that the car he's got now is just not good. I think because of that, and because now he's missing out on winning the World Championship again, he's just losing the motivation. You know, with a motivated guy looking to go to the World Championship, would he get out of his car, change into a shirt and shorts, and start eating ice cream whilst everyone else is sat on the grid wondering if the race is going to restart? No, you don't see Jenson Button doing that, or Lewis Hamilton doing that. To be honest, Kimi's got everything he really wants. He's got money, he's got fame, he's got Ferrari, he's got like an Enzo, he's got a beautiful wife, beautiful house. He's basically got everything he needs. And I just really don't... I think at the moment he's lost the motivation. He's really kind of giving... Okay, he's really giving up. I mean, because, you know, he says that he committed everything. What he says, what comes out of his mouth does exactly match what he's doing out on the circuit. And as the saying goes, actions speak louder than words. And from his actions, he's just lost all motivation. And there's no real other place he can go. I think it's really only a matter of, unfortunately, as sellers say, it's rather a matter of when rather than, you know, if he goes. You know, I mean, of course, I wouldn't mind, you know, seeing him staying in Formula One, but, you know, there we go. And I'll end there.
Okay, and finally, that question to Bassano.
I find Kimi a bit of an enigma, really. I mean, give him a fast car to his liking, and he'll be unstoppable on the day. But I mean, look at last year's fastest laps, which was incredible. But he was just poor in the championship. You look at Lewis this year when he's got a poor car, and he drives it on the limit. And Kimi just doesn't seem to do that. If he hasn't got a fast car, he's really not interested. That's why I just can't work him out. But should he be working harder with the team? Possibly.
Thank you very much. And at the end of that round, can we have the scores, please?
Team 2 Stop have 32 and Team 3 Stop have 25. Amy has 4, Lukey has 5, RG has 2 and Mr. C has 1.
Question 9 is the final question, and you know what that means. That means it's killer question time. And killer questions really, onside pod panel, mean one thing, and that is impressions.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, no.
Okay, brilliant. And this follows on from the last question about everybody's second favourite Finnish driver. He's well known for his distinctive speaking style. Had to put that in. His distinctive speaking style, the tone of his voice never really changes, and he often runs his words together. And he's also, of course, well known for saying "for sure." I would like you all to do an impression of Kimi in a press conference after he has won a race, or he has taken a pole position. And first, that is going to go to Bassano.
Yeah, I knew I'd be first. Today was just a great day for he became South African there. That's very fast. Very fast. This was a team effort. Yes, tomorrow we will do well.
Thank you. And next to Scott, please.
Well, you know, we can only really say that the car did a great job today, and I think that I think we're probably going to win the race tomorrow if the car holds up, but I really am only thinking about my ice cream supply, so I'd like to leave now so I can go and grab my Magnum. Kimmy, I left it out the fridge. And why did you do that? I forgot to put it back in. Oh, damn it.
Very nice. Next, that is going to go to Andy.
So why did you leave my ice cream out of the fridge? I was finishing eating that. So I just thought it was great that the previous Kimi impression was he was getting all emotional about the fact that his Magnum had been left out of the fridge. Sorry, Scott, couldn't remember it was
and
you.
And can we next get an impression from Chris? Thanks.
Well, for sure, I was happy with the way the car went today, and I was happy with the team, and yes, we did very, very well today.
And the last one for Team 2 Stops is Stephen.
For sure, I think so. With the team, we did a good job. Eddie Jordan thinks that I'm not a good driver, but for sure I'm better than he ever was.
Okay, and finally for Team 3 Stops, we have Gavin.
Yes, well, today was a good day for the car. We set up the car really well, and it was a very good day for driving, and I had a very good time, and the car was very nicely. I'm a bit upset with Eddie Jordan. I think that my shirts are much nicer than he is, and I'm not... And I'm much better than at drinking that he is.
That was so uncannily Kimmy.
That is the end of my questions. So can we have the final scores, please, Christine?
The final scores. Team 2 Stop have 38. Team 3 Stop have 31. Amy has 6. Lukey has 5. RG has 2. And Mr. C has 1.
Woohoo!
That was fantastic.
I knew Ross Brown was wrong about this 2 Stop being better.
Amy, that was brilliant. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I had a great time.
That is wonderful. You have closed.
Am I the first question answer to ever be TikToked?
Yes.
The first host?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Nice.
I was very curious to see what would happen if you'd actually stopped when you got to TikTok, because none of us were on the question.
I did think about it. I was like, oh.
Thank you to Kathy for hosting, because it was awesome again. Thank you to Scott for making the end of the panel.
Hey.
Thank you to Vasana for jumping in, and to everybody else who joined us. You are all excellent. That is the end of Series 2.